Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a board member for Pardes. Please tell your friends about this podcast series. Our listenership continues to grow through your help. In this year, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses a Torah portion, Re'ah. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member of Pardes and serves as the Mashgiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Before I begin discussing this week's parsha, I would like to review some themes that I've developed over the past few weeks. In Parshat Dvarim, we discussed how the major theme is the conquest of the land, and how the Jewish people should be reassured that there is a divine plan of history which guarantees them taking possession of the land of Israel, and so that they will be able to overcome all the nations who they're about to conquer. In Parshat Va'etchanan, we spoke not about the conquest of the land, but about the possession of the land, the inheritance of the land. How can the Jewish people sustain their presence in the land of Israel? In last week's parsha, Parshat Ekev, we spoke about the covenantal relationship between God and the Jewish people, reflected through the land of Israel, reflected in the day-to-day activities. In the language of Rashi, in those commandments which a person tramples with his akev, with his heel. In this week's parsha, we are focusing on Jerusalem and on the temple. It is very interesting to note that never once in the parsha do we mention either of those. The expression Mikdash, which is the Hebrew term for temple, and Jerusalem, Yerushalayim, never appear. Instead, the phrases which recur again and again are, number one, HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, the place which God has chosen, and the second expression, Lifnei Hashem, before the presence of God. In last week's parsha, we spoke about the akev, the heel, the mitzvot which a person tramples on, about the day-to-day activities. In this week's parsha, we focus on the service of God in the temple. But not the service of God from the vantage point of the priests, but the service of God from the perspective of individual Jews who come to seek out God in the temple. Let us begin by examining chapter 12, verse 2. The Torah commands the Jewish people in verse 2, "You shall utterly destroy all the places which the nations whose land you are now possessing have designated as places of worship to their gods, whether it be on the lofty mountains, on the hills, under every fresh tree. You shall destroy their altars and monuments. The trees that they worship you shall burn by fire. Their statues you shall uproot. And you shall destroy their name from that place." And in verse 4, it says, Lo ta'asun kein la'shem elokechem. Do not do thus to your God. There's a very interesting rabbinic drash which derives from this verse, the prohibition of destroying God's name. And on that basis, if we have any books or any sheets which have the name of God, we're forbidden to trash them. Rather, we're obligated to put them somewhere in a place which is generally referred to as the gniza, the place where you store things, where you hide things, where ultimately those things which we are discarding should not be destroyed, but buried, as a way of acknowledging our respect to God. But the pshat of the pasuk, the simple meaning of the pasuk is, when it says, do not do thus to the Lord your God, thus is referring to worshiping God in every place, whether it be on the hills or on the mountains or in your backyard. And hence we have in verse 5, it says, Ki im el hamakom asher yivchar Hashem elokechem, except for the place which the Lord your God has chosen to place his name there. That is the place where you should seek out God and come to. And then in verse 6, and in that place you shall bring your burnt offerings and your peace offerings, your tithes, the heave offerings, which are given to the priests, all of your free-willed offerings, the firstborn of your flocks. And in verse 7, and you will eat there before the Lord your God, and you will rejoice in the work of your hand, you and your household, in all that God has blessed you with. And just one more verse, in verse 8 it says, Do not do all that we are doing today. And the end of the verse, Ish kol hayashar be'inav. Every man, all which is straight, fit in his eyes. Kilovatem ad ata, because you have not come up to this point, El hamnucha ve'el hanachala, to the resting place, to the inheritance, Asher Hashem Elokecha noten lach, which the Lord your God is giving you. What are we told in all these verses? We're told that if we want to bring sacrifices, and specifically what's highlighted, are free-willed offerings. In the language of the Torah, neder, nidava, two types of free-willed offerings. Ola, a burnt offering. Shlamim, a peace offering. A peace offering which is meant to be eaten. If we want to bring these, we're supposed to bring them to the place which God has chosen. We're forbidden to bring them wherever we see fit. Ish kol hayashar be'inav. In the tractate Zvachim, which deals with sacrifices, there is a very interesting historical description which is given, which is not only descriptive, but it's proscriptive. This is in Zvachim, chapter 14, Mishnah 4 through 6. Excuse me, actually 4 through 8. The Mishnah says as follows. Once the tabernacle was established, the bamot, the high places, were prohibited. Va'avodah bekohanim, and the service had to be done with the priests. Minor sacrifices were eaten in all the camp of Israel. Major sacrifices had to be eaten within the curtains of the temple courtyard. In the next mission it says, Ba'u le Gilgal, when they came to Gilgal, which is when they first entered the land of Israel, Hutru ha-bamot, the high places were permitted. In the next Mishnah, Ba'u l'Shiloh, when they came to Shiloh, Ne'esru ha-bamot, the high places were prohibited. Next Mishnah, Ba'u l'Nov v'Givon, when they came subsequently to Nov and Givon, Hutru ha-bamot, the high places were permitted. And finally, in Mishnah Chet, Ba'u l'Yerushalayim, when they came to Jerusalem, Ne'esru habamot, the high places were prohibited. And then it says, V'lo haya lahem od heter. And from that point on, they were never permitted. The bamot, the high places which we're referring to, are the ones mentioned in chapter 12. The places where the nations before us worship their gods, on the lofty mountains, on the hills, underneath all the fresh trees. And therefore, that's the name Bamot comes, the high, elevated places. But in fact, Bamot, in its more comprehensive understanding, means any place outside of the temple which has been designated as a place to serve God, but not as the place which God chose, but as the place which individual people chose, or perhaps even the community, which I will elaborate in a moment. According to these Mishnayot, there were five phases in Jewish history, three of which the Jews had a prohibition of Bamot, two of which there was an allowance of Bamot. When the Jews were in the desert, once they had established the tabernacle, when the Jews come to Shiloh, and when Jerusalem is established, and from that point forevermore, there's a prohibition of serving God anywhere other than in the central place of worship, which God has chosen. But when the Jews initially enter the land of Israel in Gilgal, when the Jews had a central place of worship in Nov and Givon, after the destruction of the tabernacle in Shiloh, there was the allowance of Bamot. What is the significance of this prohibition? And conversely, why is there the allowance in the specific examples that are mentioned? The prohibition of Bamot is coming to highlight the need to have a central place of worship of God. And this is significant on two levels. On one level, because it highlights the unity of the Jewish people with a sense that individuals should always be conscious, even when they do things which are free-willed acts, an expression of their individuality, that they are part of a greater whole. The second reason for the prohibition is because a central place of worship can be a place which reflects the presence of God. And we have in fact discussed this in previous parshiot, specifically in Parshat Truma, that the major purpose of the tabernacle and subsequently the temple was to be the place of the ongoing revelation of God to the Jewish people, a place where the presence of God was manifest to the Jewish people. Hence, I would like to now interject. That is why our parsha is Parshat Re'eh, see. It is very interesting that in last week's parsha, which is Parshat Ekev, it says, V'haya Ekev Tishmu'un. Tishmu'un meaning you will hear. And in the section which we discussed last week, the second paragraph of the Shema, V'haya im shamoa tishmu'u, if you will surely hear. Last week's parsha was discussing hearing. This week's parsha discusses seeing. In last week's parsha, we spoke about a covenantal relationship between God and the Jewish people, where the significance of hearing is not just physically hearing, but obeying. Obeying perhaps in the, as we said, day-to-day routine things of life. It's a relationship which is reciprocal, but it is also indirect. There's a certain element of distancing. Seeing is a much more intimate relationship. I imagine for the people who don't know me, you're probably very curious to know how I look. And when I do the podcast, it's one thing to hear me. It's another thing to see me, to be able to have the body language. It is clear that the impact which television makes is far greater than the impact which the radio makes. The trite expression, a picture is worth a thousand words. And in fact, if I just add, the Jews at Mount Sinai in Exodus chapter 20 are described as seeing the sounds, a mixed metaphor. But the point of it is to say that there was a much more intimate, intense experience which they had, highlighting the proximity of God associated with the word seeing. This is the difference between the relationship which God has with the Jewish people through the land versus the relationship through the temple. Last week we spoke about how we do the mitzvot and we get the feedback. But the feedback is through nature. And it's very easy to perhaps confuse God with nature. Or perhaps to say that this is nature rather than God. In our parsha, the existence of a temple where the presence of God is manifest through a cloud, through fire, through a whole series of miracles, which are mentioned in Pirkei Avot. It is not just an indirect experience of God, but a very direct experience of God. But that direct experience of God is done through the medium of the nation. Hence, the Jewish people are told, at those moments when there is a sense of nationhood among the Jewish people, those are the moments where they have a more intense experience of God and where their worship of God should be done in a central place. The first example of that is when the Jews were in the desert. In the desert, the Jews are all congregated together and as such have a very intense experience of peoplehood. They have a cloud, they have a fire which accompanies them, hovering above the tabernacle. The next stage of Jewish peoplehood is when the tabernacle is in Shiloh. That happens after the Jewish people has spent 14 years conquering the land and then allocating it to each of the tribes, where at that point everyone has been given their portion of the land and are now settled in. At that point, the Jews have a different dimension of peoplehood. In the desert, it was that sense of togetherness, but once they come and get their possession of land, it's a sense of rootedness in the land of Israel. But that, in and of itself, is not enough. Because the Jews are still 12 tribes. How do the Jews then confederate and truly become one nation? That only happens when the capital of the Jewish people is established in Jerusalem. David is the one who is the first king. The first king who truly consolidates the Jewish people, who establishes Jerusalem as the eternal capital of the Jewish people, the same David is the one who purchases the Temple Mount and lays the foundation for the construction of the temple. And from that point on,